Welcome to our Farming Water Scotland podcast series. Over this series, we're looking at various mitigation options, guidance and farmers' experience to help manage and improve water quality on farm in the surrounding area. In today's podcast, we'll be discussing regenerative agriculture and water management with David Ross from SSE Consulting. Your hosts today are Pete Wright from SEPA and myself, Fiona Salter from SSE Consulting. Hi, and welcome, David. Do you want to give a little introduction of yourself and then we can get going?
Yeah, my name's David Ross. I work for SSE Consulting as a consultant and agronomist based in Stonehaven, but working sort of up and down the east coast of Scotland. Over the last sort of 10 years or so, I've been involved quite heavily with different sort of projects round about regenerative agriculture and also helping farmers to think about the ways they can transition from traditional or into a more regenerative type farming system, but really just trying to look after our soils a bit more and trying to make sure that they are working the way they are working for us as much as they can be.
That's great, David. Thanks for the introduction. I've seen you at a few events speaking to groups of farmers and appreciate you coming on the podcast today to have a chat about that regenerative agriculture topic. It's been a buzzword which has been around for a fair bit of time now. And to give you a bit of a context, this podcast is listened to by quite a broad range of listeners, from farmers to regulators to just people generally interested in land use activities. So just so everybody kind of starts from a fresh, could you just give us a bit of an idea what regenerative agriculture is about? And there's like five key areas really which we talk about. So if you could just give us a bit of information on that, that'd be great.
Yeah, so there's sort of five principles that is looked at, but the thing about regenerative agriculture is there's no script as to how it works on farm. There is no regulation around what you have to do and what you haven't to do, which is actually quite a good thing in my book, because you can make it fit your system as much or as little as you like. But the kind of key principles is around reducing or trying to reduce tillage on farm. Now, that doesn't mean not ploughing. It just means about trying to do as little as you can to establish the crop that you want to establish. The other key principle is around keeping soil covered. So having things like cover crops through the winter period so that you're getting the umbrella effect of the canopy of the crop on the soil. It's also improving water infiltration and just trying to protect the soil as much as possible. Third one's round about living roots. So again, the cover crops and the crop that you're actually producing, having a living root in the soil for as long as possible during the season, has a massive effect on the soil biology and the soil health aspect, just by those roots feeding the soil biology as well as growing the crop. It's also really good for water infiltration and making sure that we're not getting so much sort of diffuse pollution. Plant diversity is important as well, so that can be seen a couple of different ways. So diversity in the rotation that you're using, so that there is different types of rooting structures within the rotation to try and improve soil. So things like having beans and oilseed rape, which good break crops, but also give have a different rooting structure, are good at breaking up compaction and pans within the soil. But it can also mean about in things like cover crops or in a non-arable situation, in a grassland situation, having a diverse grassland mix or a diverse cover crop, which again has different rooting structures, a mix of finer rooting and more taproot type products. So the roots make a difference within the soil profile. The last principle is around integrating livestock. So we're quite lucky in the northeast of Scotland. There's still quite a lot of livestock on farm in one shape or form, but in other parts of the country, livestock's not really included that much. But over the last few years, it's amazing how How much more livestock's now on, especially on arable farms where they are grazing things like cover crops or winter cereals during the winter period, and they are adding that muck aspect or biological aspect back to the crops, which has a big effect on them as well.
Yeah, I mean, there. So just recapping those from what I've got from there, we've got the five key principles are minimising that soil disturbance we talked about, keeping the soil covered. Continual living roots is what I've got down as my note there, that penetration of the roots right the way down to the through the soil. Promoting diversity and introducing livestock. Five key principles there. But David, none of that's really new, is it, I don't think?
No, that's the thing about this type of system, and that none of it's new. Our fathers and grandfathers have been doing this for a lot of years, and you see it. I mean, Aberdeenshire in the northeast is quite a traditional farming system, where a lot of these things are done just as a matter of course. There'll be a rotation of grass within the system, or there'll be livestock going over stubbles, or there'll be a decent rotation within it. So it isn't really anything new, but in some cases they've been forgotten. So in the last couple of years, when we're seeing these sort of slightly more extreme but just different weather patterns, where we're having long periods of wet weather or long periods of dry weather, by using these principles, it can help to make soils and businesses a bit more resilient. You saw it a lot last year, where we had a couple of months of a pretty dry period, where from a springtime through till about June time, there was very little rain in this part of the world. And when you looked at the farms that where the crops were surviving, were thriving within that conditions, is those that had livestock on them, or there was muck or slurry or digestate being used on the farm, because the soils were just able to retain, there were better soil health and were better able to retain moisture and feed that to the crop. So by using these kind of principles, we're now looking at trying to build resilience into our soils and into our farming businesses.
Yeah, brilliant. That resilience discussion is certainly something that's come to the forefront in the last few years with the kind of challenges we're having with the weather, whether it be too wet or too dry. And like you said, having healthy soils makes a big difference to that kind of picture that gets played out on farm by farm basis. So cheers for that, David. Hopefully listeners will get a bit of an understanding of the basics of regen agriculture.
Yeah, thank you, David. Yeah, that moves in really nicely to my question, which was how regen can actually help water management on farm. And obviously, as we get into the more extreme weather, you just highlighted a lot of benefits that regen can help the farm on the ground. Are there any other, looking specifically at water management and how to improve water on farm, how else can regen ag help?
So really, the principles that we're looking at are all about trying to build either better soil health or improve our soils as we go along. So if you take, let's just take a reducing tillage as one of the principles that there is. So we're trying to go from full inversion, so a plough in a one-pass type situation, into a system where we can maybe either reduce that significantly, or to the extreme, go to a direct drilling type situation. Now, these have got lots of benefits for not disturbing the soil, so not breaking up the kind of fungal pathways and the soil, or disturbing the soil bacteria, fungi that there is there, letting them sort of develop and grow within their own system without too much disturbance. So that has lots of benefits by having that, and maybe having living roots in the soil all the time, you're able to make that soil stick together a bit better. So it has better things like water stable aggregates, so that when it does get the impact of an inch of rain in 20 minutes or half an hour, that it's able to cope with that. So it's able to reduce that diffuse pollution piece. It's less likely that the water is going to run over that and carry soil with it. And things like living roots and keeping the soil covered has that sort of umbrella effect, so that you're not getting, in this periods of heavy rain, the soil is not getting compacted on the top because of the umbrella effect of the crop. So it reduces the energy in the rain, and it creates, it saves there being a compacted layer on the top, which then again creates diffuse pollution, because the water then runs over the top rather than infiltrating into the soil. Now, things like water retention, again, is really important. Your soil's basically like a sponge, and trying to be able to make that sponge as effective as possible is really important. So that's partly about having pore space and air through the soil so that it can fill up with water and retain the water within it. And then it'll let the water out more slowly, so you don't get these peaks and troughs of water flow out of the soil. But it also does that for the crop, so the crop has a bigger source of water to be able then to rely on. So last year, in a very dry spell, come June sort of time, June, July time, round about now last year, we were starting to see crops suffer a bit, because there just wasn't the same retention of water in the soil to then be able to, for the crop then to be able to pick it up. And in some areas this year, even, I know some areas has had quite a lot of rain, but if you go down around Arbroath and in that type of area, there's not been a huge amount of rain at times. And in some of the lighter areas on the top of the fields, you're starting to see a little bit of the crop suffering from lack of water now.
From the farmers that you have been working with and like that have started to move into like this kind of area, do they correlate what they've done to the water retention and their soil being more resilient than, say, their neighbour who haven't introduced cover crops or reduced tillage? Or do they just think it's highs and lows of...
No, I think they do. I mean, the change takes time. It's not it's not an instant. It's not a quick fix. And over time, we are starting to see better water. I would say water management within the soil. So it's able to retain soil. It's able to retain water. Sorry, but it's also one of the things that was quite noticeable in one of my farms this year is that we had a very wet sort of January and a bit of February, but because this farm had been direct drilling, we were able to get on to the land quite early. It was able to stand the traffic in that required in early in the spring. So we managed to get nitrogen onto the crop early, which then set it up quite well for the rest of the season. So So where some of his neighbours couldn't get on a more traditional system, couldn't get on because the land was too soft and it was going to do too much damage, we could get on and spread fertiliser quite quickly. So there's little things that you start seeing. We're still seeing a little bit of lack of water, but I think that'll build in time as well.
No, it's really interesting just to see, like, because if you've got something quite close, just to see the difference, because it does take a long time to actually see results. But then it's those small little steps that give you like, oh no, it's actually working, we should keep going with it.
Yeah, there's a lot of little incremental things that you will see little benefits from, but it just it does take a little bit of time. Some things in some of the other work we've done, so we're starting to see the benefits or quantify the benefits of things like cover crops and green manures just on the back of things like water-stable aggregates. So we're able to now know that there is a quantifiable benefit of having those in the mix, which has given us now a bit of science to behind what we already sort of thought. Mm-hmm. But it's certainly, we're starting to build that kind of data bank in the back, in the behind the scenes, that we now know these things will work in most cases. So, yeah.
Great. Thanks, David.
Yeah. Cheers, David. A lot of thought, a lot of things to think about there, especially that build up over time, because sometimes it's something people want to see results quite quickly. So thinking about that, how would we get a farmer, land manager to start thinking about regenerative agriculture? What's the kind of first steps that they would take? And is there any kind of advice you'd like to give anybody who's thinking about starting this kind of move or shift towards a little bit more of a regenerative techniques?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of good things being done on farm as it is, and they maybe don't think of it as being regenerative, and they don't have to think of it as being regenerative, but just trying to put your soils at the kind of heart of what you're trying to achieve will make a big difference. There is, when you go around the countryside, there is some practices which people really should know better, that they shouldn't be doing that at certain times of the year. But by trying to reduce that as much as possible, and then starting to think about where in their systems, where in their rotations, they can start to make a few little tweaks that might make a difference to them. So things like cover crops, for example, is now part of EFA, has been for a wee while, rules have changed a little bit, which makes it a bit easier. Is there periods or during the winter months, and especially in years like last year where harvest was quite early and we could get crops off and had a period of time to get cover crops in? I mean, it looks like it might be the same case this year, depending on how the weather goes in the next few weeks. But just thinking about where you could slot a cover crop in to have a bit of cover over winter, keeping that living root, being able to improve that soil. And then you might be able to get somebody with some sheep to come on and graze those cover crops and use that as a way of integrating livestock onto the farm. So it's just taking little incremental steps that you can use. And it might be, sometimes you'll find that it's a piece of equipment that they want to buy that then triggers the change. So they might need to change the drill, or they might be thinking that they need to change their system a little bit. And that is what then triggers the change to then maybe reduce tillage, or the economics of trying to produce crops at the moment is quite tricky. So trying to reduce fuel use or trying to reduce the cost of production can then trigger this change in management as well. But I mean, things like plant diversity, because I mean, malt and barley is quite a big crop in this part of the world, but because of the poor economics of the crop at the moment, people are actually putting other things into their rotations and extending them. And but it's driven by the economics rather than driven by the benefits to the soils. But it will have a benefit to them too. So it's just trying to think about where you can tweak the system a little bit, where you can add things in that you can use on farm. And you don't need things like livestock. You don't need to go and buy stock to put on it. There is lots of people now that have flying flocks that will come and graze cover crops. They are getting used to doing that. and you'll make a bit of money out of that as well. It might cover the cost of the seed, but there's also, it might not, but there's also benefits to the soil and to your farm as well. So it's about just trying to sit down, blank piece of paper, write down your rotation, see what you're trying to achieve, and then see where there is spaces or time that you can add things in potentially that brings benefit to your soils, and also brings that resilience to your soils, but also to your business as well.
Oh, that's really good, that, David. I like that. Quite a lot of the work we do here when I'm working for SEPA and out on the farm is looking at the benefits to business as well as the environment. And sometimes one can be driven by the other or vice versa. And I think in these kind of challenging times we're going through at the moment for some of the prices we're getting for some of the products that are getting produced, getting that extra little bit from the business, that whether it be, you know, long-term resilience or another method of getting income into the farm, or improving your yield or whatever it may be, any of those little incremental changes can certainly make a difference. And if regen agriculture can be one of those things which helps support the business, it sounds like it's certainly worth people getting that bit of paper, looking at the rotation and just seeing where the gaps are and where they can potentially shove in some of these new techniques. Well, these techniques you've talking about, not new by any means. They're just a new way of thinking about things, aren't they, really?
Yeah. No, it's... Yeah, just needs a little bit of thought. Just take a bit of time, think about what you're trying to do. And actually, there is a lot of people thinking around this sort of way at the moment. They're trying to see how they can improve things or how they can reduce costs, but also improve their soils at the same time.
No, that's great. And following on from that, if farmers have tweaked an interest from listening to this, or land managers, where can they go to get more information on how to physically start this journey, or if there's any support or anything out there that they can use and utilize to their benefit?
There's lots of different sources of information at the moment. I mean, things like the FAS website, you guys as Farm and Water Scotland website have got bits and pieces on this. If you want to know a bit about your soils and try and understand how they perform, is maybe not the right word, how they react in different situations, then things like GHI have a massive information on soil maps, how that understands. Looking at soil tests and the analysis that you're already doing is really helpful as well. Lots of information from the Soil Association and from ourselves as SAC consultant as well. So there's lots of sources. And actually this week or just coming up is the Groundswell Festival, which is all round about regen agriculture. So going to things like that really opens up your eyes to what other people are doing. And the peer-to-peer learning in this is really important, in that most folk are trying bits and pieces of it and have tried and failed. So things like the Fast Connect groups and peer-to-peer learning is massive in this space, because there is not a true correct answer. There is the answer that is right for your system and your farm. So
Your soil type as well.
Yeah. And your soil type, yeah, very much so. So trying to learn from others that have made mistakes before and trying to get all that together so that you don't make the same mistakes. And people are very willing to share in this space as well. They're very, very interested in. Yeah, it's a good community, round about it. So that's what I've found anyway. So.
Thank you, David. That was a really good introduction or back to basics on regenerative agriculture. And just all those listening today, thank you for joining us today. We will save all the links to all the websites and documents that were mentioned throughout the podcast on the webpage. But please get in touch if you want to find out any more. If you've enjoyed listening, please like, subscribe and follow our podcast wherever you listen to them. You can listen back to all previous podcast episodes with Producer Farm Water Scotland on any podcast provider. Farming Water Scotland is funded by Scottish Government and delivered by SEC Consulting in partnership with SEPA to help farmers and land managers reduce diffuse pollution risks and benefit the farm business. Thank you both.
Thanks, Fiona.
Thanks, Fiona. Thanks, Pete.
Thanks, David.